Hello, welcome to the next episode of Contra Podcast, recorded live on our meetup in WeWork Prague. My name is Adam, I'm your host and founder of Contra Disruptive Branding Studio. Contra is a group of marketers, designers, psychologists, and behavioral economists. Our job is to create brands and build communication strategies either for startups or big organizations. And we believe that one of the key features of great communication is that it has to be authentic. That is why we've chosen 7 global social trends. We are researching them and discussing them with our guests so you, marketers, innovators, and other folks can apply them in your strategies. Today, we discuss the trend of attention economy together with marketing director of 3rd biggest agency network, Dentsu Aegis. Join me and Michal Majnuš now and live from WeWork Prague. Next to me is Michal Majnuš, marketing director for Dentsu Aegis. So please welcome him with applause. Also, he's not only the marketing director, but also former PR manager of Kiwi.com, and he was one of those responsible for their huge valuation. We'll talk about it later. If you are thirsty, you can take a coffee or tea over there. There are glasses for beer, and there is a hidden free beer. So don't feel ashamed that you need one.
Behind the freedom.
Yeah, behind the freedom, there is a free beer. Okay. So, who has been already on some of our meetups? Hands up. Huh. So, all the new faces. Cool. Who has heard about us? We are called Contra. Okay, 3, 4, 5 of you? Okay, cool. Contra is a small studio consisting of designers, marketers, as I am, strategic planners, but also psychologists, behavioral economists, and our job is actually to create brands. That's it. That's as easy as that. You can find us at brcontra.com. And we are doing these meetups because on the beginning of the year 2019, we discussed what will be the trends in communication and marketing, and we came up with 7 trends, and attention economy is one of them. Why? We are discussing trends because we think that marketing and communication should answer to people's needs, and trends are those who actually arise from people's pain spots. And one of the pain spots we feel, and we will be discussing with Michal, is so-called attention economy. I believe most of you haven't heard about this term before. It's quite a new term, and you won't take out anything applicable tomorrow from this meetup, okay? So if you have a brand, or you're a marketer, or you're a communicator, you need to take out knowledge which will be useful in 3 or 5 years from tonight. That's a bit different to other events. here in Prague. Bit more about Contra. We actually have kind of strange business philosophy, and that is that we actually want to become financially satisfied in 60% of our working time. What does it mean financially satisfied is not that important at this moment, but it's counted on each member of the Contra. What's more important is what we want to do the rest of the time, the 40% of our working time. Actually, we do three things. First, we invested in some other businesses so that our time becomes scalable. So if you're owner of a startup or promising startup, well, we are probably the ones who you can hire for free, let's say. We can invest this time in some pro bono projects, some NGOs, or we can work less. That's actually the goal we are also quite happy about. So that's enough of us. Also, I have to mention that this session is recorded. We will be doing a podcast from it. Christina is doing some pictures and some videos, so if you don't want to be in the podcast or in the pictures, just tell her and she will delete you and you will be forgotten forever. That's about GDPR. So, let's jump into the attention economy. I want some rough estimate. How many accounts, online accounts, you think you have? Any number?
30.
30?
Dozens.
Dozens?
5?
15? Okay, the true number made by researchers in UK, and it was, the research was done via the emails in one company. So they were checking how many registration emails they are getting. It's between 90 and 200 online accounts per person. Just remember last time you were using something for free. I don't know. For example, a PDF converter or something like that. All right? So just to sum up this, here are just some of the items of daily use, and for each of them you need an online account. You can see some books, some music, phone, camera, some currency. You are actually using account for that. That's from where the word comes. Diary, maps. This person who took this photo even doesn't have a map, a real map. It's a printout of Google Maps. So think about that when you are setting up a new account. There was another research by McGuffin. They were asking people if they would be okay with paying for the services they are using now for free. So as you can see, 72%, around 70% in most of the cases would pay for YouTube, for Google Maps, for Google Drive, Facebook, LinkedIn, no, who is the worst? Facebook Messenger, it seems, but everything is around 70%. So, 2/3 of the people would pay for these services. And how much they would pay? You can see it differs, but it starts around $2 per month, up to $4.20 per YouTube. Seemingly, the YouTube is the most valued amongst people. However, you don't need YouTube to find your way around the city. There was another interesting question. How much these services would then earn if they were for money? So, as you can see, Reddit is on the best project increase by 10%. It's mostly because it has not that many users, but they will be paying quite a lot. You can see YouTube, the current revenue is around $3.4 billion, and if it would be paid by the users for $20 per month, it would gain something around $17 billion a year. They are adopting YouTube, so they already rolled out this service, I think quite recently, also for the Czech users. I think just 2 days ago I saw an ad. You can see, for example, the projected rise by LinkedIn would be something like 300% in the revenue. So why are not doing it? Mozilla actually came with this idea quite a few years before, I think 3 or 4 years before. They actually rolled out the idea that they would sell you ad-free internet in the browser for $5. So I guess they will be bundling these services into the $5 fee somehow and redistributing the revenue. So what do you think is then the core product of the services like you have seen, like YouTube, LinkedIn, Facebook, or others? It's actually you. It's your data and it's your attention. And that's why we will be talking about it today. This is a keynote which should get you thinking. And at any time of our discussion with Michal or during this presentation or my presentation, feel free to comment or ask. First place, which actually make you pay attention, which is quite funny, pay attention, is school. And there's a case of a school in the US, which was in a local district, and it was quite poorly financed. It was then approached by, let's say, business developers, who actually made an offer, and that offer consisted of showing ads during the idle times in the classrooms, which probably is not very ethical, but in the marketing lingo, it is driving early consumers' engagement and brand awareness. Just to see it. Just to know when you see it in the marketing presentation. Digital vegans. There is a group of people who are trying to not use the big five of the tech, because these are the companies that actually gains most of your attention and that gains most of your data. I won't go into details, we can play the film later. But there was an experiment by a journalist in New York, and she tried to live for a week without the big five: Amazon, Apple, Microsoft, Google, and the last one, Netflix probably. These were the total attempts during the week that each platform tried to do with her phone, because that was switched off. So you can see Amazon actually tried almost 100,000 times to reach her, to somehow interact with the data or interact with her attention. Well, this is a bit different story. The zettabyte, who knows how much is a zettabyte? I actually forgot. It's a lot. Zettabyte is the number of marketing data we are producing every year. And the conversion rate on most of the e-shops is somewhere around 1%, maybe some successful e-shop is 2%. Conversion rate, for those who doesn't know, is the rate between the people who saw an ad and people who made a purchase. I believe you know the company called Oracle. They're actually one of those pioneers in selling marketing data. Oracle did 2 years ago or 1 year ago, a activity, let's say, that you actually can put your IP address and your email in their database, and they will show you how many data they have around you. And this was me, actually. Well, not that guy, I don't have a bird. But the Oracle thinks a year ago that I'm actually this person. I'm male, I'm also female. I like to buy some baseball merch. And I was browsing for some woman accessory. It was before Christmas, so I admit, I maybe was. But that was the only right thing, okay? So that's Oracle, what they know about me. And they're making huge business around this data. So yeah, that's the zettabyte, where's the 1%? There's another research by content management tool which actually shows that brands year to year produce 3 times more of the content, but the total amount of the interaction stays on the same level. In reality, it means that 90% of the interactions in online world are done by 10% of the content, or as you can put it, 9 out of 10 posts gets almost no interactions. So there is clearly not enough attention for them. Well, they are not as good as the last one. There's another statistics for those not familiar with the media planning. Not working media is everything you don't buy as a space where you show your ad. So the media are the spaces where you buy to show your ad. The non-working media is the creativity, the strategy, the marketing data, marketing research, etc. Here you can see the year-to-year growth last 3 years in these spans. So as you can see, the working media, the ones that they are actually reaching people, are not growing fast enough to actually the non-working media, I mean the creativity, the number of the content you are producing. Speaking of content, Facebook and Google actually now owns 2/3 of the global media budget. This is quite a new situation which happened in the last few years. What it causes is that actually, the rest of the media, and probably you weren't thinking about Facebook and Google as medias, but they are for us marketers, are fighting to keep on their numbers and to keep on their traffic. These are, for example, stats from UK. As you can see, the last 10 years, it dropped by 3.2 billion of pounds, and you can see actually the share of the search engines in social media. So you can see that actually something around 70-80% are occupied by Facebook and Google when we speak about the UK. These are stats from Airmarketer, which are self-explanatory. The digital ad spending is rising, and the total media spending is also rising a bit, but the classical media are losing the battle. There's one interesting thing, when you compare these two stats, the spend in the digital media and then the trust in the digital media, they are totally different. So maybe it may be a generational thing that people are still trusting newspapers and news magazine and not trusting social media and digital media. But there's definitely some disproportion in how much we are investing as marketers into the spend in digital media. So there's also a question of traffic versus audience. Business Insider, as a media, is an outlet which is driving traffic. So they have ads here, and here, and here. And actually, they can make $0.60 per year per user. That's their revenue per user. Because they are trying to drive traffic. One of the biggest online medias are closing down and laying off people. When you compare this with the New York Times, who just, I think, 6 or 7 years ago, went from free media, accessible media, to the subscription model, their earnings for one user is $2.6, so $2 more. We may say 200%. It's part of the trend. This is Subscription Economic Index, and actually the bright blue line you can see at the bottom, rising a bit on the end, is the S&P 500 index, which is actually the stock index of most of the biggest retailers in the US. So you can see that actually the subscription economy grows 8 times faster than most of the American retail. This is also concerning the markets, small markets like Czech Republic, so Sweden, Denmark, Finland. These are small countries like Czech Republic. So, to sum up, you can see that Dropbox is actually having something, the valuation around $12 billion with only 500 million users. Snapchat has valuation of $8 billion with 186 million daily active users. But the numbers just doesn't make it, really. So they're really not earning on the advertising only, but on their users too. So this is the message of today's. And my question now to you and to Michal, before he starts his presentation, is do you think the privacy could become an advantage, competitive advantage? Michal?
Yeah, it's on me.
Yeah. Right, hello everybody. It's a tricky question, at least for media and marketing agencies as we are. Basically, what we think or what we thought when GDPR started a year ago was that we are basically just ruining all the process of modernization how media works, and that basically all China startups will just be much bigger than the Western Europe's or the America's startups, and they will just beat us. That was our initial thought. Then maybe it could work in the Europe area, because it's very granular. Lots of countries, lots of different cultures. People are much more aware of their privacy than in the USA. So for example, for Facebook, it's now a problem. GDPR is a problem for them, Google as well. They are actually starting some movements in America to bring GDPR into the USA as well. But they will adapt. They will find a way how to adapt to that situation. But it will probably mean that the people will need to pay for it. Because if you're not paying for the service, for the product, you are the product. So, yeah.
All right, but when people will start paying for that, wouldn't be you as advertising agencies out of job?
Not necessarily, because I will show you at the end of my presentation that basically what we were witnessing a couple of years ago, or since 2008, was the decrease of marketing effectiveness, because we were too focused on short-term results, short-termism, on discounts and sales promotions all over the internet. And what actually seems to be working much better is branding. The branding goes into TV, and TV will be probably free, I think even Netflix shows dead battery.
Really?
Hello.
And even for Netflix, it will be at some point the secondary business model, how to get money for the service. So they will start, probably they will start ads. I think it will be on different levels. So for example, if you pay $5, you will have only one ad an hour. If you pay $10,000, you will have nothing or something like that. I don't know yet, but it will happen.
All right. Thanks.
Thanks, Christina. We'll bring you another mic. I would like to continue in this discussion, but we need to let Mikkel present before, because then it would be out of the topic. But I had another question for you. Actually, or let me comment on this. Would it be a competitive advantage? Our other guest should be my colleague psychologist, Nikola Frolova, but she's jet-lagged from the flight from Canada. She just flew in from Canada from a conference. Nikola would probably tell you that actually there are different levels on when people think that companies are getting into their data, into their privacy. What I was trying to ask is, what will be the tipping point when you start hating Facebook for taking your data or hating Google for taking data? We're actually doing research in this, and we found out that there are different levels and different topics how people in different nationalities are taking seriously their privacy. Let me give you an example. In Spain, it's totally impossible that you would be discussing how much you earn or how much you pay a rent in a pub with your friends, right? It's really a private thing. In Czech Republic, it's probably quite okay with some friends. Definitely, it's okay to ask how much you pay for a rent, and maybe it's not polite to ask how much you earn. But in Czech Republic, the people values most in their privacy are their health records. So there will be probably different tipping points and in different services. So that's probably why it hasn't happened yet. So that's to just say what Nicola would say. I will now ask.
Maybe if I,
yes?
I may jump on the thought. Who do you think is the biggest villain in these digital privacy races? Who's the biggest villain? Is it Google, Facebook?
Who's the bad guy?
Who's the bad guy? And actually, it actually seems it's Amazon.
Yeah.
Because
it's
Amazon.
So. I've seen it.
Yeah, Amazon actually, yeah, this is one statistics, but there's another one. Actually, in the US in 2018, Amazon earned much more money from your data, from data of the users, than from the selling the goods. It's starting to be the gap between selling the goods and the data is actually getting bigger. In 2019, they're actually using their power to basically ruin smaller sellers on the Amazon with their own products. So I think it's the Amazon.
All right, the baddest guy is the Amazon. What Mikkel is going to show you here is their own approach on attention economy. How do I play here? Yeah. I see. Okay.
I need my nose.
Ooh, I'm not very sure we are able to do your notes, really. Are you able to do it?
Alright. I will try my best.
Bit of improvisation. Mikkel will show the stake of Jet2AQ's network on the attention economy. There are actually a huge network of agencies around the world. And they kind of tried to develop a new currency. Am I saying it right?
Basically, yes.
A new currency in which you will be able to measure the attention. Is it a good thing? I'll let you decide.
It's a good thing for agencies. So, yeah, this is Dentsu-Aegis Network. We have 11 agencies on the Czech market. Some of them are so-called powerhouses, like Isobar, iProspect, who runs basically all over the globe. We employ more than 60,000 people, and we are actually the fourth biggest marketing and media agency in the world, a group of media of agencies. So what does it mean? We are actually responsible for most of the ads, or many of those ads you see every day, on streets and in TV, on digital, and that's a not small number, right? 4,000 ads a day. That's the actual number of Huffington Post, which means it's 166 ads per hour, even if you're sleeping. So that's a lot. That's why we started this discussion about the attention economy. What does it mean? Do people notice your ads? What's the impact of the ads? And how the hell it all works, actually, in this very specific era.
Just know, I think this number per person doubled in the last 6 years.
Yes. What was the last ad you actually remember or saw? Remember anyone? I saw the last one I saw because I was escaping Metro and I noticed the ad of student agency, the local TA called Letenki na telo. And the reason why I noticed it is because the marketing director of student agency is my very old friend, and I pray for him every day since we started the campaign. But let's get back to attention. As I mentioned, advertising effectiveness is really decreasing since 2008. 2008 was the last big economic recession, and there are two main reasons for this decline. Actually, IPA, I don't know if you're familiar with it, it's Institution of Practitioners in Advertising. It's one of the most credible organizations of its kind in the world, so we should believe the numbers. They studied 12,000 ads and case studies they have in a database, and they come up with this beautiful graph. There are two main reasons for the advertising or the decline in advertising effectiveness, and those are short-termism, as I said. We are just basically sales promotions are those ads which are running on the internet, discounts and stuff like that. We are failing in branding. Nobody knows our brands. We don't do investing in it because it needs some money. And not small amount. And the second reason for this decline is too many ads in the public space. There are two main reasons for it. So we started this 5 year long project, Attention Economy. It started in London, where the Global Media Partnership Teams is based. And I will tell you a little bit about the project. I will show you first results of our pilot study. I will tell you a little bit about the thinking behind all this, and then I will show you how we can, right now, even though we didn't finish the project yet, how we can actually work with it. So, we think that attention is a new media currency. What does it actually mean? Our current media currency is impressions, reach. That's what we are buying media against. But we are not sure if the impression is scored actually in the report. What does it mean? Did even the user notice the ad? Did they notice the messaging? What does it actually mean? We don't know now. And we are not really sure if they even pay attention to it. So we started this project by trying to define what the currency is, what the attention means, how to measure it, what's the actual value, and how we can plan and buy media according to it. Our idea is to create a new, better system on media play, on better understanding how actually media works, and we are trying to find the standardized model and prediction model of how we should approach this. So we conducted this research in 14 markets. We started our parallel study in UK, US and Australia on 3,400 people. We used eye tracking softwares. We downloaded screen scraping ads, screen scraping apps to people's phones. We were measuring three types of attention. First one is full gaze, because people were intentionally watching the ad. Peripheral gaze, meaning that people had the eyes on the screen but were not watching the ad, and no gaze at all. And we were trying to predict what the sales uplift actually could be. We used the model called short-term advertising strength. Is anyone here familiar with it? What does it actually mean? It's quite complicated and technical, but I will show you numbers afterwards and maybe you will understand it a little bit better. So we started with two simple hypotheses. If someone cannot look at the ad directly, it has no impact on sales. That's kind of reasonable, right? Intuitively, you think it's logical. If someone looks at more of the ad or for longer, it will have a greater effect. Again, very logical hypothesis, and I will show you how we did score. So, hypothesis number one. We actually saw that, of course, the most of the ads were experienced only partially. Actually, only one of the third ads were seen with the full gaze. So it means that basically people are trying to avoid ads. That's kind of logical as well. But the difference between the peripheral gaze and the full gaze is quite small. So we think that what marketers should focus on is not to force consumers to look at the ad directly and watch it with full intention, but just try to create the ad so people are not avoiding it. That should be enough for the sales uplift. Now you can see the SDAS is a short-term advertising strength, and it means that you have two groups. It's an experiment, so we have two groups: one which was exposed to the ad, one which wasn't. And if the groups are equal, they score on 100 on the indexed scale. If there is a sales uplift, it goes above 100. That's the idea behind it.
So actually, the peripheral gaze is 22% more.
It's not percent. It's points.
Okay.
So it just means that the sales uplift will be bigger, basically, than the low gaze. So you need to compare those three groups. It doesn't mean that the sales uplift will be 22%. It doesn't mean like that. But we see that, and it's basically a good thing for marketers. You just need to find a way how to create the ad which grabs at least some attention of people, or people are just not turning their TVs off or scrolling down the feed on social media, for example. So, hypothesis number two. We see kind of relatively linear relationship between the attention and pixels in view, meaning that basically the more ad is visible, the more sales uplift it scores. Logical, the relationship is really linear, but what's very interesting is that even the ads which had almost which were almost invisible on the screen scored some value on the sales uplift. So even the ads which are bad, which are not very creative, can score some uplifts on sales. So they have some value for us. Then the more pixels in view collide in higher attention. Of course, if there's more of the ad on the screen, people will pay more attention to it, so the sales uplift will be bigger. And the same applies for the duration. If the if more seconds of the if the ad is shown for more seconds on the screen, it drives higher impact. Yeah, this is all very logical. There is no big surprise. But the thing is, what comes to our minds is, should clients really pay for each impression the same amount of money? If one ad is seen only for 1 second on the screen, should they pay the same amount of money for the impression as for the impression which was shown, for example, for 30 seconds? That's a big difference. The attention and the sales uplift is kind of different. So they need to find a way, the media houses especially, they need to find a way how to insert this thinking into their media plannings. And that's what's our goal. But of course, kind of some of the job is on our side. We need to find a way how to bring people to screens with ads, and the media houses need to find a way how to work with viewability. So what's the conclusion of the research actually? What you should do if you're trying to do a really creative, really successful campaign? What's the approach? I think it's this one. You just need to tie up your consumers to the chair and let them watch your ads for 2 weeks or 3 weeks, and they will definitely, or at least you will score much more sales. But if you saw the movie Clockwork Orange, very famous one, if you saw the movie, you see the big problem behind it. Not only human rights, of course, but there is one problem. It took some time. Alex's mind was changed after 2 weeks in the chair, so it means that if you want to influence minds of, for example, 10,000 people, you will need 416 years. I don't know if you have so many time, so much time. I don't. This is the long-term project, let's say, the plan B. And what's the plan A? The plan A means that you need to find the agency who will reduce the avoidance of your ads, and you will find the media house who will report the numbers for viewability and impressions correctly. That's why we started this whole project. It was just a pilot study, so those are first results. We will of course continue for another 5 years, and hopefully at the end of 2024 we will have answer for all of your questions, and for all the questions of media houses and agencies as well. And we will have the standardized model how to work with media planning and with these presence and viewability metrics in it. But what you can start doing right now, there is one thing you can do actually from now, that is start being creative. If your ads are creative, it will of course score much more attention within your consumer base. You will get much longer time of people watching your ads. Actually, your consumers will be sharing the ads on social media. They will be talking about it. They will be watching it with their families. And actually, it happens. It's not fantasy. It actually happens every year with John Lewis Christmas ads. People are sharing it all over the internet, and the earned media metric just rises incredibly. And I will show you one single, very simple communication model, how you can work with that, how you can input this Joe Louis feeling into your ads. I will show you two ads. Both of them are very successful. Both of them have something similar in it. They have some special feeling. They were so successful. For example, this one, it's our. Of course, we won a gold Effie for it. It's something like an Oscar in the advertising industry. It was very successful, and after the presentation, I might show you some numbers if you would be interested in it. But let's have a look on them. I will tell you what's the secret afterwards. could mention one thing that maybe there will be some tears. I have a book here for the one who will be most touched by the ads, or maybe for someone who will ask the most intelligent questions and find it. And this book is actually about the model I will present you after the second video. Sadness, the second one, smile, humor, and that's they are basically on the opposite side of the emotion scale, and they are very powerful, very, very strong. So if you use them in your campaigns, in your strategies, they will work. I can admit it. But more importantly, what they have in common is something we call tap forward effect. It's basically a simple concept that people, when they see your ad, they will want to share it with other people. That's the basic concept. They will start talking about it. They will share it on social media. They will comment it on YouTube. When you go to YouTube and try to find the current John Lewis commercial, you actually find out that there is a guy who commented "Okay, I had to wait for John Lewis to start the campaign, so now Christmas can start." That's something your brand needs to do, and this is the way how to do it. You need to the commercial need to strengthen your autopilot. That's the concept of Daniel Kahneman. If you are familiar with it, it's a very famous behavioral economist who actually won a Nobel Prize for it. And the concept is based on the fact that 90% of our decisions are made basically on autopilot, unconsciously, let's say, and the other 10% are done by the lazy thinker. So if your brand is in the lazy thinker stage, people will be thinking about purchasing you. You know, you are too expensive. You don't have so much value for me, and so on, and so on. If you are in the autopilot, you're basically in top of mind of your consumers, so you will be the first brand they will think when they're thinking about the product. Then you need to find a way how to connect deeply with your target group and how to get people talking about the brand and about the commercial. That's the way how to do it. We have very detailed and very complex methodology which this concept is based on. We actually can measure your brand against three heuristics which are connected to those 3 points. So we will tell you exactly what emotion you need to do, how to get people talking, and how to get the right to pilot specifically on your market. And it's a long process, but it takes time, but it works, as you saw in the first commercial. This is the guy who wrote the book I was mentioning. It's Wim Vermeulen. It's a Belgian superstar, marketing superstar. He won many Effies, so advertising Oscars. He actually started Ogilvy Interactive. If you're familiar with the brand, it's the guy who actually established it and founded many years ago. And he is sort of a mentor to me, and he created and developed this concept. So this is the name of the book. You can buy it, of course, and I have one example here for those of you who will ask the most intelligent question. The concept is based on very simple assumption that to make your brand grow, the share of voice must be bigger than the share of market. That's easy as that. All those commercials I show were very successful because the earned media were much higher than bought media. They need to pay some money for TV, of course, but then the main job was done on digital, on YouTube and on social media. People were talking about it, people were commenting, liked it, and of course shared it with their friends. That's how you score these numbers. So, as I said, we have a really long detailed methodology behind it. If you're interested in more details, just ask me now or find me in a couple of minutes behind the bar there with a beer. Thank you.
Thanks.
Wait for the beer. I still have several more questions for you. First one is that actually an agency guy from agencies that were pursuing last 20 years the idea of driving sales is now telling us that the brand matters the most. Is that true?
Yes, exactly. Basically, it's getting back to basics.
Right.
It's as simple as that. We were forgetting about what advertising was about. The golden age of advertising was in the 60s, 70s, when they were basically doing just branding. And it worked, and it works now, and we have actual numbers to prove it.
Alright. Actually, this is connected to the topic we wrote about and had a meetup also. It's called End of Advertising. Actually, Petra is the only one who saw that speech in January. The End of Advertising is an idea by Professor Scott Galloway. I don't know if you heard about him. Scott Galloway is a New York University lecturer who actually came with the idea that you have consumers and producers on each side of a big ocean, and it's called Ocean of Nothing. And on this ocean there are little boats who actually carries emotions and creativity, and these boats are called brands. So you take an average beer, an average car, any brand day that it's sexy or it make you look younger, and you deliver that across the ocean of nothing to the consumer. That's the old way. But what Scott Galloway says is actually now, thanks to the data, Amazon and Booking and other platform has, you don't need any more brands actually, because there is the demand. There is the offer, and thanks to the data, you only turn them. So he says that actually this is the end of brand, end of the advertising. That's one way of looking at it. The second way of looking at it is actually when we are losing the attention, as we proved to you, and we are losing the hits on the consumers, and we are unable to deliver them the message, and we see that actually there are competitors like Amazon who can easily, with the data, deliver the right product to the right consumers. They are actually outperforming the marketers. So then actually, when you think about all this, the brand is the only difference when you are choosing what to buy and what to not. And there's a quite an important concept. It's hypothesis, and it's based on psychology. Again, Nicola would tell it better, but this is based on so-called signaling effect. Let me explain. The hypothesis is that actually online ads doesn't build brands. It's because most of the brands or products you remember are so-called necktie brands. So you kind of see them every day. You see them around faces of people, you see people driving in the cars, you see people wearing some clothes with brands on them. And actually, the signaling effect does that we are thinking if the brand is seen by others in our surroundings. And the hypothesis says that online ad is so personalized that we actually lose this impression that it's seen by other people. So it does not do the culture imprint. We don't see it in our surroundings. It's just a hypothesis. It hasn't been tested yet. But what do you think about it, Michael?
I think it might be right in some cases, not all of them. Because, for example, online video, I don't know if you read the famous famous research called The Long and the Short of It, from those two very famous British guys from DDB, Adam and Eve. They basically said that online ads are very good for setting up the discounts and for shows themselves, but you can build a brand in online video, in YouTube, in Vimeo, for example, on social media. For branding, it might work very similarly like in TV. And actually, in our research, we tested even the formats on different devices, and we found out that presenting the tested group's TV program on mobile, on tablet, and in TV, just regular linear programming. And actually, the attention paid to classical TV was much smaller. It actually scored the worst from all of those devices we tested. And TV in mobile, on mobile device, actually scored the highest on the attention scale. So people are on mobile, when they are seeing mobile ads, they pay much more attention to it, even if it, let's say, classical TV, even though it's basically internet TV, so it works a little bit different. But yeah, the attention to the TV advertising, even on mobile, is higher than on classical. So yeah,
when people think it's in TV, even if that it is not, they feel that other people are watching it, or
it might be that, yes.
Yeah.
It would be nice to test it, but that might be the assumption behind this.
Very good. Last topic I would like to open, and then it's free bar. Michael was also part of the QE.com, and when we were preparing this event, we also spoke about the valuation of different tech firms, and actually we found out that this attention economy we are seeing, it's even affecting the, let's say, startup economy. this actually might seem strange for you, but as you can see, there are many, many cases around the world of big startups, technological startups, where actually getting the valuation they do not deserve, or they are unable to fulfill for now. And I believe you remember Kiwi.com, but actually what Michael finally found out when they were launching Kiwi and maintaining its PR image is that actually more people know about it than use it. So can you tell us more about it?
Yes, yes. In 2015, the startup was quite big at the time, but the number of Czech people who were buying air tickets on the platform was really small. It was just 1% of all consumers or all customers of Skypicker at the time were Czech. But we started this PR campaign a couple of months before, and we started building the brand on Oliver, on the founder, on Oliver Logie, because he was a very interesting, interesting man with an interesting story. So we tried to use it, and we were kind of successful. In the peaks, we had, for example, in 2016, we had 30 or 35 large articles just about Kiwi.com every month, which is kind of good number if you realize the size of the Czech market. But I think what we were actually doing, we were not doing it for grew the sales, because the sales in Czech Republic were not interesting for us. People were just buying air tickets, which goes directly to the destination, which is not the product of Kiwi.com. I don't know if you're familiar with it. It works like we were connecting unconnected flights. So for example, when you were traveling to New York, you could take fly with British Airways to London and with British Airways from London to New York. Or you could take Ryanair to London and British Airways from London to New York. Two different airlines that were not cooperating at the time. So the air tickets were actually much cheaper, because the Ryanair is of course much cheaper than British Airlines. But this is what not happens with the Czech consumers, customers. They were traveling directly, so the product was not for them. But everybody in Czech Republic, let's say, knows the brand or knew the brand at the time. We were not doing it for growing the sales. We were actually doing it for, let's say, investors' relations. Because we were trying to convince the investors to put money into it, to put more money into it, and to create, let's say, a little bit bubble all over the brand. Pretend that the brand is stronger than it actually is, maybe, let's say. That's what our job was. I was working as a PR manager, so it was my responsibility, I'm happy with the results, of course, but it's not very ethical, as I understood it afterwards, for example, when you count startups like Theranos or WeWork, or Uber, they work very similarly, and they are just losing shitloads of money of their investors for nothing, basically. I was afraid that it will happen to Kiwi.com as well, and actually it happened a little bit, because at the time when we were thinking about selling Kiwi.com to another investors, to General Atlantic, as it actually, they actually bought it this year, but at the time we were thinking about it, we thought that we might get the valuation of 10 billion Czech crowns. And it shows that it's just a number we come up with somewhere in the basement of our villa, because it was not actually real. The real number was 5 point something, so it was 50% of the value we were expecting, because of the PR hype, of course. Yeah, that actually happened. I think it happened to many of those really successful stars that we see on the stage. For example, do you know Theranos? You remember the case? It was at the time it was one of the most or the startup with one of the most biggest valuation in Silicon Valley. It was a company who aims to find the way how to test blood of people with really small samples. But it actually happened that the technology didn't work at all. They didn't have a product for 15 years. They existed for 15 years. They raised $400 million and nothing happened. They didn't come up with anything. It was all lies, all fraud, and the value of the company at its peak in 2014 was $9 billion. $9 billion for nothing. And the revenue in 2014 was $100,000.
Yeah.
You know? So you see the big difference. And that's what they did. And it actually all started with two single articles, one in Business Times, one in Wall Street Journal in 2013. When this happened, they lied to media and they were able to raise so much money. Now they're actually probably in 2020 they are going to jail for 20 years, all the founders. So they might get some judgment after this.
All right, thanks for that explanation. I think we can all agree that attention is the most valuable thing these days, and it will be for the next decade. But also, you need to always take care about the ethics connected to the attention and what you're actually marketing. Thanks for your attention. We value it a lot. So thanks, Michal, and see you at the bar. We're open for your questions. Just hit us, meet us. It's not very comfortable like this when we are having the mics.
I need to give the books to someone.
Yeah, okay. So last thing, the most intelligent question.
They will find me if I bring it back. So.
Okay, so find Michal and tell him the question, okay?
Yeah.
Thanks.
That was our Attention Economy Meetup. Hope you enjoyed new and challenging point of view on information. Feel free to comment and share either on podcasts or social networks. You will find all the links, including presentation slides, in this podcast description. And if you don't want to miss next one, definitely subscribe to our newsletter at wearecontra.com. To the next time. We'll be right back.